This is the OTB Television Network, a service of Capital District Off-Track Betting.
Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to the Saturday edition of Racing Across America. I'm Seth Merrow. Remember me? I should say, rather than welcome to, welcome back. I'm thrilled to be back in the studio live. It has been since the end of March, so 8 weeks or so, as we have kind of been hunkering down with everybody else and keeping up with the stay-at-home orders as things have progressed. Now with the racing reawakening across the country, we are back in the studio now, and as I say, really happy to do it. We had a couple. Mike Callahan has been in a few afternoons doing some OTB Live. He was in the studio, and I was by phone for a couple afternoons, Florida Derby and Arkansas Derby days. So we've had a little bit of activity here on the network as far as live contact. But now we're kicking back in with the regular schedule here on this holiday weekend and beyond. And as I say, with the last couple of months, my highlight of the week being the trip to the grocery store. It was nice to actually travel down the Northway today and jump in the studio. Hopefully you have all been keeping safe at home, and if you've been at work, thanks for continuing with your job, because if you've been at work, you've been an essential, and we certainly appreciate that. Again, a nice holiday weekend with some nice weather out there, so if you have been hunkered down, at least you'll be able to get out in your backyard in a lawn chair or go out to the park and take a walk this week. But again, some great racing. We'll cover a lot of it on the show this morning. We'll be joined in a little bit by Joe Christofek, the paddock commentator down at Churchill Downs. They have a big stakes card today, which features the return of a lot of runners from last year that were notable. Dunbar Road, the Alabama winner from last year. Sharing, who won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly Turf, will return, as well as Maxfield, who had a very promising but short two-year-old campaign. He'll be in the Matt Wynn trying to get some points to go to September's Kentucky Derby. We'll also be joined a little bit later on by John White. Santa Anita has a big holiday weekend. We'll talk some of their stakes today. They have a couple of grade ones coming up on Monday, Memorial Day. So we'll hit on that with John. John also, in his latest online column, has a Belmont top 10. And as the Belmont is the first leg of the Triple Crown in this strange year, we'll get John's opinion on who he thinks may be live going into that Belmont. So we'll talk that as well. But speaking Belmont stakes and Belmont Park, the okay was given by the governor a few days ago for racing to start on June 1st, with that being a Monday. Belmont scheduled to open on Wednesday, June 3rd. Looking forward to that, with the Belmont Stakes now scheduled for June 20th. And I thought we'd talk some New York racing with our friend Pat McKenna from the New York Racing Association from the press office. Pat, good morning.
Morning, Seth. How are you?
Very good. Happy to have you on board, because I'm sure all of our viewers are looking forward to some NYRA racing. It's been a while, but before we get to racing, I'm going to ask all the guests this morning, just talk a little bit about what the last couple of months have been like for you. You're down in the New York City area, so I'd love to know a little bit more about that. I've been hunkered down, and I said earlier, the excitement for me over the past few weeks has been the weekly trip to the grocery store. I've driven through downtown Saratoga a few times, and it's very quiet right now, and I'm just curious, what's it been like for you and the NYRA folks in the press office for a couple of months in this stay-at-home time, and what's the area like down in that greater New York City area?
Yeah, I mean, I'll start with on the work front. It's been really, really busy the last, basically throughout the pandemic. I mean, we were obviously operating and racing at Aqueduct, when this all hit in full force, we were able to continue racing from March 13th through the 15th without spectators, with all those health and safety protocols in place, which was lucky. And then we made the decision on March 19th to suspend racing, to devote all of our energies and efforts to keeping the, you know, the 585 residents at Belmont Park safe and secure, as we're working through, like everyone else, managing this pretty frightening situation, especially in New York, in Nassau County and Suffolk County, the hardest hit in the country and at certain points in the world. So, and then sort of just managing our way through each point, each phase in this pandemic. So obviously incredibly welcome news last Saturday when Governor Cuomo authorized racetracks, not only at NYRA, but across the state, to resume limited operations, as you said, on June 1st, requiring that no spectators, and obviously all of the health and safety guidelines in place. You know, we're in some ways lucky that at Belmont Park, we've continued uninterrupted training operations have continued. As you can imagine, it takes a village, quite literally, to take care of. Now we're up to about 1,500 thoroughbreds on the property. So the men and women that are so dedicated, that have been at work every single day, no holidays in this business, obviously. So, the horse men and women, the backstretch workers, those folks deserve all the credit here. Now that we're able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, to resume, limited racing operations on June 3rd, that would never have been possible without the hard work of everyone living, working at Belmont Park. So kudos to them. As we've been able to effectively communicate to the state, to the Gaming Commission, why we're a unique business, and we've seen it across the country. Our athletes are on the property. Everyone is there ready to go. It's a small and incremental change to go from a fully fledged training operation to do live racing. And again, it's why you've seen Oaklawn and Gulfstream and now Santa Anita and Grace Lee Churchill back as well. So and looking ahead, the Belmont Stakes, it was really important for us to schedule this event as soon as we thought we could safely and effectively do it. We had always pointed to June. I think we were committed to having this event as such a quintessential New York event, and to be able to do it on June 20th, even in an upside down year when it'll lead off the Triple Crown and not close it, was really, really important. And I think even more important in New York, to be able to gather around on the evening of June 20th and see those horses come out of the track, even though it'll be behind closed doors, that's still an event. I think you've heard that from the governor. Live sports, live entertainment. These are still things which can bring us together, even though we're still largely apart. So, like everyone else, we've just been working as hard as we can to keep everyone safe, to at the same time make sure that we're in a really good position to resume operations and to get back to work. So we're excited to get going again on June 3rd.
As you say, the last day of racing was Aqueduct on March 15th, and you were under safety protocols then with no fans. And I'm just curious as to what the discussions and the tweaking has been in the ensuing couple of months as you've been waiting for things to be able to reopen. I know that some legislators and some folks even up here, including, business people up here, wrote to the governor and said, let's get the safety protocols in place and get racing back at Belmont and potentially Saratoga. And again, I'm just wondering, over the past couple of months, were you looking at places like Gulfstream and Oaklawn, and were you in contact with those folks to kind of see how your protocols met up with them, what was working for them on the racing side, how you could improve things for that opening day that's coming up?
We're in a unique position in New York and in Nassau County, considering the impact that the virus has had overall, far, far different than in Arkansas, in California, or even in Florida. So, our protocols have been firmly in place throughout, right? I was you know, when thinking about other sports like Major League Baseball, I don't envy the position they're in because they have to completely restart. They have to get this ship moving from zero. Whereas, you know, we're not about to put anything in place. We've had everything in place. So sure, the front side operations, you know, a bit of a difference, temperature check for everyone on the property. We're wristbanding folks once they clear the health screening daily so that we have a very good sense of who is on the property, tracking the population a little more closely. So again, we know exactly who is there on any given day, and that's important because should there be a positive, then you need an effective contact tracing program, which again, we've had in place at Belmont. We've had positive cases, and we've been able to mitigate and reduce risk precisely because we've had a really effective contact tracing program. Last Saturday at Belmont, we did 852 COVID-19 antibody tests for NIR employees, for the backstretch community. I think in this day and age, it's really all about understanding the impact that the virus is having on any given population and has had on any given population. It's what informs behaviors and safety guidelines and all the rest of it. And so much of it that at this point is really common sense and almost second nature. You know, the steps that individuals take make all the difference. Wearing masks, washing hands, being responsible about your social distancing. These are the things that actually break the virus, that not only bend the curve, but ensure that we won't see it in the way that we have over the last 6 weeks ever again. So in terms of, again, the backstretch community, you know, they have been so diligent about following these protocols to a T because it is really the difference between being able to get back to work and not being able to get back to work. So, we have an incredibly detailed plan and proposal that we were communicating in conjunction with the Gaming Commission throughout this process. And you mentioned the support from elected officials in and around Belmont Park, in and around Saratoga Racecourse, in all those districts on the Senate side and the Assembly side. Really gratifying to see that support. And at no point was this ever adversarial. As you can imagine, thousands and thousands of businesses were in the same position that we were, trying to do everything possible to get back to work because we're confident that we can get back to work in a way that doesn't, you know, enhance or increase risk and certainly doesn't take away resources from the broader effort. So thanks to Governor Cuomo for recognizing that racetracks are in a unique position, that we can operate safely and we can provide some much needed entertainment and a welcome distraction as we all get back to what this new normal will mean individually.
Yeah, and I just want to reiterate, because I know when a lot of racing in the country stopped and some was still going, people were saying, gee, you know, how can racing still go when some other sports have stopped? And you've alluded to this already. First, hats off to the people on the backstretch. And I will also tout, if people go to shop.nyra.com, there's a nice promotional event going on now with some nice T-shirts, Saratoga Tough and Belmont Tough, and the proceeds go to the backstretch organizations, Belmont Child Care, Backstretch Employee Service Team, and, of course, the racetrack chaplaincy, friend Umberto Chavez and his group, all doing great work for the backstretch people. But I note this because, again, as you've alluded to, between a race day and what's going on normally now, it's not that different because the backstretch workers are still there. They still have to feed the animals. The horses still have to go out on the racetrack and work out, which means the track has to be maintained. So really the difference between what's been going on over the past couple of months and what will happen on June 3rd isn't that significant of a difference. There are going to be some front side people, some TV people and whatnot, but essentially it's a going operation and has been for the past couple of months regardless.
That's exactly right. Yep, indeed. And that's it's what sets the business apart, and has allowed us to come back quickly. You know, again, the prospect of starting from scratch, which is what Major League Baseball, the NHL, and the NBA are staring straight in the face of, has to be incredibly intimidating. You know, gathering athletes from around the country and resuming some sort of an operation Whereas with us, the operation never stopped. It's absolutely, and we've all now experienced this, much, much harder to resume and start again than it is to shut everything down. I think it's what the country broadly, New Yorkers are going through right now. This phase reopening is challenging. There's still so much uncertainty. And for us, it was always pretty clear that we voluntarily suspended for all the right reasons. And at this point, and going back to late April, we're confident that we can get back to business, get back to racing, to support, you know, as you know, Seth, hundreds of small businesses, thousands of hourly workers. We're talking about family-owned farms, jobs in every single county in New York State. These big-time pro sports, horse racing included, are huge drivers of economic impact, and that's true in Saratoga, it's true at Belmont Park in Nassau County, and it's true at Aqueduct. So this ecosystem can go a long way to, you know, to reducing that economic uncertainty for so many people. And let's be honest, who is this, you know, this economic hardship is going to hit small businesses and hourly workers the hardest, and already has. So to the degree that we can get folks back to work, earning a paycheck, taking care of their families, that's a huge responsibility that we take seriously. And NYRA is a nonprofit for a very good reason, and that's because our goal is to support and sustain the sport, and that's what we're focused on.
Well, let's set the table a little bit, because, again, our viewers, I'm sure, are looking forward to June 3rd. And I was thinking as I drove in today, when I first got into the game, and this shows how old I am, I guess, there was no winter racing. So there was a couple of months there was a break, and people really looked forward to the return of racing. So this couple-month hiatus for New York racing is probably the longest in years and years. I think people are chomping at the bit. But I have the stakes schedule in front of me, 25-day meet, 40 stakes, 22 graded, 9 grade 1s, 4 BC winning your in races. Just set the table a little bit on really what looks like a condensed but stellar meet coming up at Belmont.
You said it. I mean, even opening up on that Wednesday, looking at some of the news this morning on who's likely in those races, it's going to be a really exciting kind of sprint of a meet. I mean, you know, no one knows better than you, but that 40-day Saratoga meet often feels like a dead sprint with a small hiatus sort of following the Travers for those 3 or 4 days where you can take a breath. I have a feeling that this is going to take on a similar feel. You know, it'll be great racing. Everyone is keen to get back as quickly as possible. And then, you know, sort of loading up and looking forward that Belmont Stakes at 1 1/8 on June 20th, it's all new. And yeah, you're dead right. I mean, I've been at NYRA for 4 years now, and the longest break in terms of live racing is probably 5 days. You know, we had it sometimes around Christmas, but remember, even we closed up Belmont on a Sunday, and now we start up at Saratoga on a Thursday. So you're right about the break, and you're right that it focuses everyone's attention back on what we're trying to do, and that's run the best racing in the country. And I think you'll see that starting June 3rd at Belmont.
I'm curious, some of the familiar faces starting to show up on the backstretch already?
Yeah.
As far as on the trainer side, again, there have been the backstretch. And I'm going to show that video that was on Twitter in the past few days. The next segment I have that, which shows kind of the activity on the backstretch. But I'm wondering on the trainer side of the game whether you're seeing some of the familiar names get back to New York.
Yeah, it's starting to come back. You know, still need some clarity in terms of getting the Oklahoma track open for training. As you know, this time of year, you're talking about lots of horses, and it will be great. We're working with the Gaming Commission to get that facility open the first week of June. With any luck, same sort of process, providing all the health and safety guidelines. And that'll sort of be true at each stage of this process. So, but yeah, folks are starting to come back. There's a feeling that, you know, the excitement is in the air, going from sort of suspended animation to focusing on looking at actual races is a great thing.
And Belmont now June 20th, cut back in distance, logically, given the situation, to 1 1/8, $1 million on the line. the first leg of the Triple Crown, I think because of the situation, you're going to wind up with a just a nice, fun, big, competitive field that I think is going to be great. But I'm just curious. It sounds like from listening to you, spring was always going to be the game plan for the Belmont regardless. But was there a spring-fall debate?
Sure, there's always, I mean, a little bit, right? When Churchill made the announcement, I think your head sort of snaps to attention and you say, huh, you know, what could this mean? But you start doing the math for us, you know, you get into the middle of October pretty easily. Even if you had the standard spacing, Kentucky Derby 2 weeks later, Preakness 3 weeks later, Belmont, you know, you're right up against the Breeders' Cup and these other things. So that debate was pretty brief, and we returned our focus to June. But there were, listen, Seth, as everyone watching and listening probably knows, I mean, there were points in the last 3 or 4 weeks where you're saying, is any of this stuff going to be possible, right? Is anything going to come back? So I think that there's a sense, especially over the last 3 to 5 days, that we are now returning to some sort of normalcy. And with each passing week, things are starting to come back. So we were always focused on June. I think it's such a quintessential New York event to be able to come together and in some way, in this new way, whether it's at home or with friends, it is going to be great. Great for New York. It's a celebration of what's so great about racing, especially here in New York.
Yeah, as I say, I think people are chomping on the bit for the meat, and I think looking forward to kicking off the Triple Crown, and I think the Belmont Stakes this year is going to be a lot of fun with the whole situation regardless. But, Pat, before I let you go, obviously being up here in the Saratoga area, I have to ask you, I'm sure, you know, the past couple of weeks have been concentrating on the stakes schedule at Belmont and getting underway, but I'm wondering any timetable on when we may get a little more definitive about the Saratoga meet?
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, we never really have the luxury at Nairo of focusing on just one thing at a time because we always have the big thing right down the road. And for us, nothing bigger than Saratoga. So we've been engaged in conversation first and foremost with local officials, elected officials, the business community, to be sure that that we're properly communicating to them and they're comfortable with everything we have in place in terms of testing, tracing, health and safety for the return first to the Oklahoma and then for the live race meet. At this point in time, things are obviously evolving quickly. The governor's authorization requires that these racetracks run without fans, so that's what we're prepared to do at Saratoga. We're looking at a stake schedule in the next probably 2 to 3 weeks, I would guess. And that's, you know, and looking at some of the necessary adjustments, it should come as no surprise that, you know, looking hard at the date of the Travers and figuring out where that now best fits considering the Kentucky Derby. So we needed to get the live date for the resumption at Belmont before all of these other pieces started to fall into place. So, you know, guys in the racing office are working hard on the Saratoga piece. A few things still a little bit up in the air, but you know, start of the race meet on Thursday, July 16th, is now assured, which is great.
Pat, we appreciate the visit and the time, and try to get a little bit of a breather, because as I say, I think once you get kicked into this Belmont meet, the press office will be off and running, and then it's on to Saratoga. But again, we appreciate the visit, and good luck going forward to you and everybody down at Nairo. We will certainly check in again.
Thanks so much, Seth.
Pat McKenna from the New York Racing Association. Again, racing kicks off at Belmont on June 3rd, and the Belmont Stakes this year, June 20th. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll have a little brief segment. I have a little video that shows the backstretch workers at Nairo, a couple other news and notes. So a little brief segment when we come back. And then Joe Christofek from Churchill Downs. A little bit later on, John White from Santa Anita. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Heads apart as they move down the back stretch.
And he guides them down to the rail as the field turns for home.
A furlong to the finish.
The incomparable, invincible, unbeatable Cigar!
It's too close to call!
He is moving like a tremendous machine.
Wagering on horse racing just got a lot easier at Capital OTB with our newly designed state-of-the-art mobile wagering site. Everything you need is right here on one easy-to-navigate mobile platform. Set your favorite tracks, pick your horses, place your bets, all with a simple tap of the screen. Plus, you'll have access to Capital OTB TV for all our network programming. So log on to CapitalOTBBet.com and see just how easy wagering on horse racing can be.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Again, Seth Merrill in the studio. Happy to be here, back in the saddle again. And again, hopefully you have gotten through the last couple of months, hunkered down, and everybody's healthy and happy, and racing is starting to kind of reawaken. Certainly want to thank Gulfstream, Tampa, Oaklawn, and Little Fonner and Will Rogers Downs, who kind of kept the racing game going for the past couple of months, and appreciate being able to watch that and wager as well. Speaking of Fonner, admit it, we all played a little Fonner over the past couple of months, and on Wednesday, it's their closing day. They'll have a mandatory pay in their pick five, which over the past couple of months has a few times attracted a lot of money. So, again, thanks to those tracks that kept rolling. I mentioned to Pat, we had a video. They put it out on Twitter the other day, New York Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association, NYRA. I think Ernie Munich, our buddy Ernie, made it, I think. I think he did the video portion of it. But it just gives you an idea of the backstretch and kind of what's been going on there the past couple of months. Despite no racing, the horses still have to be taken care of. So let's fire that up right now and get a look at the Belmont Park backstretch.
The iconic paddock of Belmont Park is eerily empty. The massive grandstand is starkly vacant. Belmont Park is a ghost town. Well, no. No, it isn't. Not by a long shot. The backstretch of Belmont is occupied by 1,300 thoroughbred athletes who are cared for by 800 workers, most of whom live on the backstretch. During the pandemic crisis, we have been fighting the spread of the virus with a massive effort. Masks and gloves provided to all. Quarantine facility. There's a free backstretch clinic. Social distancing strictly administered. Cleaning, disinfecting, all part of the daily regime. The horses are being ready. The backstretch workers have seen to that. We are ready for the start.
And again, hats off to the folks on the backstretch who kind of kept things going down there in New York, because, again, those horses have to be fed and taken care of. That means the track has to be maintained so they can get out and get some exercise. And I will remind you again, go to the website shop.nyra.com, and you can buy one of those T-shirts. They're kind of nice. Belmont Tough, Saratoga Tough. Proceeds go to the backstretch organizations, Best, Belmont Child Care Association, and the Racetrack Chaplaincy. Gets split up equally between those three organizations. So by all means, do that. I just wanted to also take a minute here to kind of set the table, because, again, we had Gulfstream, Tampa, Oaklawn, Fonner, and Will Rogers Downs keeping us going during the ensuing hiatus period. But Santa Anita opened up last week. Golden Gate opened up. And I'm just looking down the list of tracks here. Churchill Downs got underway last week. Indiana Grand is looking at a June 15th startup. Monmouth, July 3rd. Finger Lakes is looking at July 13th. They want to get training open on June 1st. And then, as is normal at Finger Lakes normally has those little short races to get the horses back. A lot of the horses really are Finger Lakes horses that take the off-season off. So they're looking at June 1st to get back into training and July 13th start. That's the game plan. Philadelphia is in a funny situation. Pennsylvania's in a funny situation. Parks, Penn National, Presque Isle. Pennsylvania is still up in the air. Maryland is still a little up in the air. Arlington, Fort Erie is looking at a June 2nd start. Woodbine's looking at June 6th. And the Canadian Triple Crown, like ours, changes up this year with the Queen's Plate being September 12th, the Prince of Wales over at Fort Erie on September 29th, and the Breeders' Stakes on October 24th. So they have switched up their Triple Crown just as we have done ours. Delaware, I don't know if I mentioned, they're looking at a shortened meet starting on June 17th. So again, racing reawakening. We're looking forward to things getting back to some sense of normalcy. But as I said earlier, Churchill Downs is underway, and that means a really nice stakes day today. Really nice. Five stakes races with the comebacks of some notable runners. So why don't we take a break, and when we come back, we'll tap into Joe Christofek, the paddock commentator down there at Churchill Downs, and we'll get some of his ideas on today's stakes action. Stay tuned.
Sales reports on my desk by Monday.
Whoops. My bad.
Love racing? RTN brings you every live simulcast on your home television, plus live video streaming and race replays on your PC and mobile devices. To order, visit RTN.tv. RTN, a breed apart.
Welcome back. As promised before the break, our friend Joe Christofek from Churchill Downs. Joe, good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Very good. And before we get into a really great race card, I've been asking the guests this morning. My first day back, I said I've been hunkered down the past couple of months. The highlight of my week, the trip to the grocery store. We last talked to you at the end of the fairgrounds meet. Normally, you would zip right from fairgrounds up to Churchill, but Churchill had a delayed start this year, so I'm just wondering, on a personal note, how did the hunker down period go for you between fairgrounds and Churchill?
180 degree reversal from previous years, from jumping right in from the fairgrounds meet in the preparation for the Derby, which is the craziest time of a crazy year in existence for me. And we'll be doing that now in August. going to be really weird. But, yeah, man, I mean, I still did some stuff for Clint Spires, you know, from home, and, you know, really dug into the Oaklawn meet, which has me even better prepared for this Churchill meet, although the last couple of days of results certainly don't show that. But today is a new day, and I'm feeling really, really good about the race.
And just before we get into the racing again, I always like to ask you about your brilliant racing partnership. You are the major domo of that group, and I know some folks up in our area have pieces of the brilliant racing horses. And I want to say the last one I saw, Eskin Forrett, was that Arkansas Derby Day? And do you have any horse, any of the brilliant horses lined up to run in the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, that was his first race back in 5 months, and he threw him to the wolves. He's training great. He had a good workout earlier this week. He'll be running at this meet. We've got Yes's Ginger, Risky Behavior coming back off the shelf, and then we've got Steely Dams and Template, both taking a little bit of a break before they come back later this summer. And we just opened the third partnership. We're going to give it a go. We're going to go to Ocala next Saturday. The Breezestone starts, and there's going to be a lot of opportunities. We think it'll be a buyer's market, so looking very forward to that. It's brilliant horseracing.com if you want to get involved.
Nice, nice. All right, before we get to this week also, I wanted to go back to last week and just talk about the return of Monomoy Girl. I have the chart here. It was an 85 buyer, so the buyer wasn't off the charts necessarily. But I thought, given her layoff, and we have the replay up here, Monomoy Girl is the number two horse. I thought she looked pretty good. She was, you know, they were making up a little ground in the stretch, but given the length of her layoff, she hadn't been seen since 2018, had that, 2019 hopeful campaign that never happened. And off the layoff, you know, this was a legitimate field with Talk Vuv to me and some other nice horses in here. So I thought this was a pretty nice comeback last week for Monomoy Girl. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, visually it looked good, right? But the horses that were supposed to run good against her didn't. Talk Vuv to me, I thought I had no excuse. I thought she ran horrible. But Monomoy Girl, I mean, she was in a tough spot in between horses. She was a little headstrong once she got a finish like she was supposed to. It was a good starting point for a horse that, quite frankly, Seth, I didn't know if ever going to make it back to the races.
Yeah,
she was at Fairgrounds this winter. She was jogging galloping, you know. Brad never worked her there, so I'm like, what's going on? Went to Keeneland, light bulb came back on, and it's just really good for racing. Hopefully she can get back to close to what she was before.
Yeah, looking to maybe get some duels with Midnight Bijou, because that would be a lot of fun. And we're just watching her come down the stretch here. As you say, on the back stretch, she was kind of in and amongst horses and looking to go. And when she got the go signal, finally made a little move in the stretch and opened things up. Again, that was last week. Nice comeback for her last week. There are some comebackers on the card this afternoon. In an all-stakes pick five that kicks off in race number seven with the Shawnee. And one of those comebackers we're looking forward to is Dunbar Road. Dunbar Road won last year's Alabama. We will watch the replay of that as we talk. Dunbar Road will be the number one horse. Again, last year right up here at Saratoga. But She's a Julie is in this race for Steve Asmussen. Chocolate Kisses, who won the Honeybee last year down at Oaklawn Park and has some nice stakes experience on the resume as well. Fun race. Dunbar Road, though, with the comeback, will attract a lot of attention. Your thoughts on the Shawnee?
Well, you might have been quarantined for a couple months, but Seth off the layoff, that was a very professional segue. You haven't lost a step after that. She's a Julie for me, man. I know Dunbar Road, everybody's going to be excited about her. She's going to be over bet. I don't think Chad doesn't want to race here against just a handful of starters, and he's had live horses that have run well. Dunbar Road, her four-year-old debut, would expect her to run huge off the bench, but she's a Julie loves Churchill down. She's 3-for-6 here. She's got a grade one win in the La Troyenne on her resume. She's got good speed. From what I've heard, she's been training lights out at Keeneland leading up to this. And she's a 5-year-old mare taking on the 4-year-old Dunbar Road. So I'm going to give her the edge. It looks like a 2-horse race on paper. Maybe a little bit of vault, who I don't think has reached her ceiling necessarily just yet, and the blinker's off. But she's a Julie for me in that one.
All right, let's move on to 3-year-old fillies on the turf in the Teppan. Oh, I should ask you first up, what's your weather look like this afternoon?
We had a little bit of rain late last night, early this morning. Chance for body showers later today. At the moment, it's great, fast and firm, but there is a potential chance of some showers, and I don't know you know, if we're going to get those or not, or if they can affect anything that's going on. We certainly hope not.
All right, we'll keep our eyes on that. But the Teppan is the three-year-old fillies on the grass, and this is another comebacker, Sharing, who won last year's Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly Turf, makes the comeback in here, the seasonal debut. Abscond is a horse that I think has a little bit of potential in here. I'm going to take a shot with Alms. And we're watching Sharing. We're watching the replay of that Breeders' Cup Juvenile Filly Turf last year. Sharing is the number 11 horse getting it done. I'm going to take a little shot with Alms on the outside, though, for Mike Stidham, who is 4-for-4 so far. I am not thrilled about the outside post, however, but if we can get a trip, maybe. But what are your thoughts on the Teppan?
Mike Stidham's not thrilled about that outside post.
Yeah.
Talked to him for a little bit yesterday. Alms is really good. I got to see her win at Fairgrounds, the race she was supposed to win, the ungraded Chantel Lannery. She won that at 1-5. The post is definitely going to be tricky for her. I think this race is a lot deeper than Alms and a lot deeper than Steering, although either of them could win. I like a long shot walk in Marrakesh with the three holes, Jose Ortiz and Ignacio Correas. Ran a huge race in the Florida Oaks behind what I thought was a good winner in Outburst. She's also in this race. I think she's got a chance as well. In the Sanibel Island, I love walking Marrakesh. I bet her. Broke slowly. She was in tight early. She was wrestled back. She was very ranked. I think she's better than she looks on paper. And in a wide open race, I'm going to take a chance with a little bit of a long shot.
10-1 on the line, but you get Jose Ortiz in the saddle. That'll help things out. In the Blame, the ninth race on this Saturday afternoon. It is a mile, and I've always kind of liked Owendale, one of those horses I'm a little bit married to. Won the Oklahoma Derby last year, but we're going to go back to Owendale's last race, which was the Clark. Tom's Day Tot, the number 2, wins the race. Mr. Freeze, the number 9, runs third, and 8 Owendale runs second. And I point this out, A, it was over the Churchill Downs Strip, but Tom's Day Tot went on to win the Oaklawn Mile a little earlier this year. Mr. Freeze this year, second in the Pegasus World Cup, then won the Gulfstream Park Mile, third in the Oaklawn Park Handicap. So I think the first and third finishers that bookend Owendale both came back to run pretty well this year. So I'm going to tilt towards Owendale, but what are your thoughts in the Blame?
Yeah, the thing about Owendale, though, I think that, you know, this is probably a prep for this Stephen Foster.
Yeah.
I'm not sure a one-turn mile is necessarily what he wants, but set the pace he's up, which very well could, he could win this race by accident. I think he's the best horse in the race, most potential moving forward. I give a slight edge to Silver Dust, though. I know he's been running some races in all of his recent starts. He was second in the Lucas Classic. He won the Louisiana. He won the Mineshaft. He was a tire fifth in the New Orleans Classic, a race won by his stablemate, By My Sanders, who has since come back to win again at Oaklawn. But I really think the one-turn mile with that tactical speed and finishing punch at 8-1 in the morning line, you know, I'm going to go to New Orleans Classic and take what he can do at face value on his best day. And I think the cutback to a one-turn mile could benefit a horse like this.
Yeah, this is a fun race, though. Long Range Toddy, Global Campaign, Always Mining, Backyard Heaven, Snapper Sinclair, American Anthem, Diamond King, Discreet Lover, Field of 14. The Blame looks like a monster on the card this afternoon. Let's move on to probably the most interesting race, in that given this year, it's going to have some Derby points and Derby potential, particularly with Maxfield, and I'm going to bring up the Breeders' Futurity for Maxfield, who will be making the three-year-old debut, benefits this year from the move back of the Kentucky Derby. Maxfield here at the Breeders' Cup at Keeneland last year will be the number 6 horse, getting it done over Governor Morris. I think Pneumatic is interesting in here, though, for Steve Asmussen. Comes off a 2-for-2 record to start the career down at Oaklawn and maybe primed to move forward in Stakes Company. But again, all eyes on Maxfield, I think, this afternoon. Your thoughts, however, in the Matt Wynn?
A lot of people love Maxfield, a horse who has not run as a three-year-old, needs to prove himself to me all over again. I know that Wynn in the Breeders' Futurity was scintillating to the eye, but that was a racetrack that certainly favored off-the-pace types that day. And like I said, got to prove it to me all over again. I think he could win. I like Major Fett a little bit. He broke poorly in the Louisiana Derby, was the only one making up ground in the end. But I'm with you, Seth. I'm going to go with Pneumatic on top. I think he's got the most potential moving forward. His female family the Dam is a Half, the Pyro, and many others, a really, really good female family. My Uncle Mo, one on debut sprinting, then one going a short stretch mile, four wide on the first turn, hard held, six wide on the second turn, responded, and still one under a hand ride. That is a look of a good horse to me.
All right, and finally, to cap off this all-stakes pick five at the end of the Churchill card on Saturday afternoon, the War Chant for three-year-olds on turf, a subdivision I always think is a lot of fun and validated by this race with a nice full field in here of 14 with an also eligible. I'm going to take a little look at Hieronymus coming off a race down at Fairgrounds that you saw this year. Hieronymus, the winner there, he'll be the number five horse. I thought Hieronymus had the potential to maybe speed pop this field. There's a couple others in here with some early speed, and if that turns out to be the case, Field Pass may be the one that catches him in the stretch. So I have Hieronymus over Field Pass. What are your thoughts on the War Chant?
Bombs away. It's just you and I talking, right? Nobody's listening. Nobody's going to go to the windows on my long shot play maybe of the year. I'm going with Bomb of Breeze. If you go back and watch the replay.
Nice.
I know you're a big replay watcher, Seth. Go back and watch the replay of the debut. I know the speed figure didn't come back fast, but was shuffled back early, steady advance on the rail, held up in traffic, won very impressively, and galloped out like an absolute monster. Rusty Arnold had this horse entered in an air that then a couple days ago got washed off. He's taken a shot in the stakes race, so this horse is ready to run, and again, going to be every bit of 30-1 in a race that's very competitive. On paper, I give this horse a little bit of a shot. Not sure that he can win, but I would certainly see them in your tries and supers and to spice up the gimmick in a fantastic race and a fantastic card. We got over 80 grand in the single six carryover, late pick five, all stakes late pick five, $500,000 guaranteed in that pool. There's even 45 grand, I think, in the super high five carryover, and we never see a pool, a carryover pool like that in that wager. So, you know, if the weather holds off, which I hope and believe that it will, the card from top to bottom is absolutely amazing. It's almost like a mini derby day. It's that good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And again, it was great to get Churchill back on the agenda last week. And as things return to some sense of normalty and horse racing starts to reawaken, Montemore Girl last week certainly attracted attention. A lot of the horses that are making returns this afternoon as well. So, Joe, we appreciate the visit, the thoughts. Looking forward to checking in with you as we watch the racing this afternoon and get your paddock commentary as well. And we will talk again in the future.
All right, sounds good. Best of luck today. We're all going to need a little bit of it with how wide open these races are, but should be some very, very strong performances by the winners, and that's the way it should be.
Looking forward to it. Joe Kristofek from Churchill Downs. We will take a break. When we come back, we'll shift our attention to Santa Anita. John White will join us. Stay tuned.
Wagering on horse racing just got a lot easier at Capital OTB with our newly designed state-of-the-art mobile wagering site. Everything you need is right here on one easy-to-navigate mobile platform. Set your favorite tracks, pick your horses, place your bets, all with a simple tap of the screen. Plus, you'll have access to Capital OTB TV for all our network programming. So log on to CapitalOTBBet.com and see just how easy wagering on horse racing can be. No matter where in the world you are, the excitement of wagering on horse racing is just a click away. You'll get live streaming, past performances, race replays, our virtual tote board, analysis and selections from professional handicappers, a simple, safe, and secure wagering platform, and best of all, you get track prices. CapitalOTBBet.com. Bet any place, anytime at CapitalOTBBet.com. And be sure to download our new mobile app from the iTunes Store or Google Play.
Bridgestone is an outside threat. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Bridgestone. Bridgestone surges past. Bridgestone wins the Belmont Stakes.
It's in front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Bob Bob. These two are travels head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire.
Welcome back. We are reaching out to John White from Santa Anita. When we get him, we'll plug him in. But I had some other news and notes to hit on anyway. I mentioned this earlier, Fauner Park, they wrap up their meet. They will have a mandatory pay on Wednesday, which should work out all right for them. Because with the holiday week, some of the major players will be going Monday, and so Wednesday's still going to be a little bit of an opening. There was a nice article on Fauner by Mary Rampolini in the Racing Forum, kind of talking about how they made the most of this, you know, lockdown period with very limited racing. Chris Katulek from Fauner said that the first 3 weeks of the meet, before they had spectators there, it was before everything happened, they were averaging about $220,000 handle on a card. And then in the subsequent no spectator pandemic time, they were averaging $2.1 million. So things are a little bit different for Fauner, but they will have a mandatory pick five on their final day. That'll be coming up on Wednesday. So keep that in mind. It has attracted quite a bit of attention over the past month or two. Tiny Fauner, so good for them. As I hear in my ear now, I think we are being joined by my friend John White out at Santa Anita, and they're back racing as well with a nice holiday weekend stakes agenda up. John, good morning.
Good morning, Seth.
Happy to have you on board and talk a little bit with all the guests this morning. Before I've gotten into the racing, I've just asked, how are you making out during lockdown time? For me, it's this is my first show back in a couple of months, and I was happy to get out of the house and be back in front of the camera and back in the saddle, just plugged into doing something a little bit different. What's it been like out in L.A., and how'd you make it through the lockdown period so far?
Well, it's not been fun, to say the least, and especially here in Los Angeles, it's been hit pretty hard. But the main thing for me is Santa Anita is back going, and to a large extent, I think they could have been racing like Gulfstream Park and Oaklawn Park and Will Rogers Downs and some of these tracks, even Los Alamitos in the same general area here. So I think politics, more than anything, might have played a hand in Santa Anita not being able to race. But fortunately, finally, Santa Anita's back in business.
That's what we like to hear. We're getting some sense of normalcy as racetracks start to open up, some sense of normalcy, again, as there is a reawakening of the racing action, including Santa Anita. Nice stakes card today, and also on the holiday Monday as well, with a couple of grade ones. Before I get to those, I just wanted to ask you, I saw some pictures on Twitter. Are the jockeys essentially bunked at the racetrack now? It looked like they had what were described as when you watch movies and you see the kind of back behind the scenes of the movies. It looked like those trailers that the stars hang out in, and it looked like some of the jocks at Santa Anita are, as I say, bunking down on track now.
Well, that's what I've been reading too. I can't attest to that in person because I haven't been to Santa Anita, but that's supposedly the situation, that the jockeys during the racing week are being sequestered, so to speak, at the track. So when they've been given these orders to do it, and they've been very, from what I've read, they've been very receptive to it, because with all of us, we're just happy to have Santa Anita back racing, and whatever it takes, pretty much we'll do.
Absolutely, yeah, no question about it. All right, let's talk about the stakes this afternoon, the Daytona 5.5 on the grass, and this is a fun race. When I looked at it, first I was thinking Sistron, the number five horse, who comes off a couple of nice wins going back to Del Mar in July, and then the comebacker this year at Santa Anita, and the San Simeon was a good win as well, both with triple-digit buyers. But then the more I looked, and I went and looked at the replay, and we'll show the replay here, Wild Man Jack in Maidan back in the beginning of March. We're going to watch here. He will be in, the silks are described as light blue, but on the replay, they look kind of white. He's towards the inside, and you'll see him pull away. This was a stakes and track record for the Doug O'Neill runner going over to United Emirates. I thought this was a good performance. Does have to make the comeback off a trip like that, but the latest workout looked pretty good. So I'm tilting towards Wild Man Jack, but what are your thoughts on the Daytona?
Well, originally I was going to make this run the morning line favorite, particularly since he's got the back-to-back 100 Meyer speed figure showing on his past performances. And that was a very good effort for him to win the San Simeon on this turf course. But then I looked at how often Tristan has been favored in his career, and it's not very often. So for whatever reason, he doesn't seem to get the respect from the betting public. That is something my father taught me, my late father, back in my early days of handicapping, and it was a good lesson, and particularly in terms of making the morning line. How a horse has been bet is an important element in terms of just looking at their chances to win a race, and particularly in their terms of their chances of favoritism. And Tristan, he could still go favorite. I made him buy the second favorite, but I switched it to Wildman Jack, largely off the race that you're showing, and you've got Mike Smith. That look, Seth, when you can win a race with that kind of purse, $350,000, there are 16 horses in the race, and you win by almost 5 lengths. My goodness. I mean, you're beating 15 horses in that race, going about six furlongs on the grass. I mean, that's a tremendous performance. And then as you articulated, he not only broke, he really smashed the course record that day. So, but another reason I tilted toward Wildman Jack to make him the favorite was the fact that he does have Southern California form, and actually his record at the three-year-old sprinting on the grass in California last year was pretty good. But it's obvious that he's improved as a four-year-old. His three-year-old form would have put him right in the mix.
Yeah.
But that four-year-old race is the one that puts him over the top to me. But then you've got to respect Stebbins, because this horse ran a splendid race in the Breeders' Cup first sprint on this first horse, going only 5 furlongs. He was closing like a rocket that day. Didn't have the best of trips and finished fourth. But if it'd been 5.5 furlongs that day, he might have even won it. So he's also from the Doug O'Neill barn, as is Wildman Jack. But the Texas Red also merits considerable respect. He is really blossoming into a real top grass sprinter. And when Peter Miller gets these grass sprinters into good form, they tend to just keep firing and firing and firing. And you got a red hot Flavian Pratt riding. So those are the four major players to me. And any one of the four could win. But if Wildman Jack runs anywhere close to that race he ran last time out, I think he will be extremely tough to beat.
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to see if he can validate and put a couple back-to-back, because it becomes even more impressive if you do it first time back from overseas like that. The Whittingham, a little bit later on the card, Grade 2 event, a couple $100,000, a mile and a quarter. This is a fun race as well. Rock Emperor comes west for Chad Brown, Sol Cumins, Matticat, and Michael Dubb and company. And that one is interesting just on the connections. Multiplier is interesting to me. But I'm with you in the morning line. The morning line, you had United at 6-5 and Originaire at 5-2. And I went back and forth and back and forth with these two. And eventually I tilted towards Originaire. We're going to look at the allowance race that Originaire won on February 29th, be the sixth horse in here. And I thought off of that effort, oh, I'm being told now we don't have that. But take my word for it, he wins by a couple of lengths, wins by 5 lengths on the chart, 5+. But more importantly, Umberto Rispoli, who was an Italian champion, rode over in Hong Kong, and has really taken Southern California by storm, that he sticks on board, rode him so well in the last few races, that attracted my attention, made me tilt a little bit towards Originaire. I'm going in that direction. What are your thoughts on the Whittingham?
Well, I made United, as you say, the 6-5 favorite. Will definitely be the favorite coming off a win in the San Marcos. And, you know, he nearly pulled off that huge upset in the Breeders' Cup turf against the horse of the year, Brixton Mortar. He only lost by a head of 51-1 on this turf course. But I'm going to take a shot. This is one of the pieces we're in the program where I have my selection. I'm going to go against the horse I'm making the morning line favorite, and that is, I'm going to go with the Originaire. You mentioned that margin. Here again, when you see margins like that on the turf, they deserve extra credit rather than on the dirt. The horses separate themselves more on the dirt than they do on the turf. Those races have to be much closer together because you don't get that kickback from the dirt. And so the UCA horse at Bridgenair really had a trouble trip, some trouble in that race last time out. And it just looks to me like he's really kind of blossoming. He's another 3-year-old last year that could be blossoming as a 4-year-old this year. And so the key is the price will be better on Bridgenair. There's no question he will be a better price than United. But then you also have to respect Pat Brown. He's bringing in Rock Emperor. This horse ran a very big race in New Orleans that time out, and he ran a very good third in the Belmont Derby, Grade 1 race, the Belmont United States debut. He was dead last early, came flying late to finish third. So I think we're just kind of scratching the surface with Rock Emperor. You get a rat or two. So I think he's another one you have to really respect in this race. But because United, I think, will put a shorter price off his reputation in that Breeders' Cup race, is going to be such a hammered horse at the betting that I'll take a shot. But Joel Bridgenair is the better price. And you mentioned with Foley, I'm a huge fan of his. In fact, that Daryl McCarr, who's the chief steward there in the state of California, back when Breeders was riding in Southern California in the early 1980s, he asked me one morning at Hollywood Park when I was with the racing farm if I'd be interested to be his agent. And I turned him down on that because of the fact that I was ensconced with the racing form at the time. And here's a case where when I realized that Ron Anderson was going to be taking the book of John Velasquez and leaving Rispoli open, I actually gave consideration as to maybe going to Mr. Rispoli and make a case to take his book. I'm that big of a fan of his that I'd be willing to be his agent. But Seth, I handicapped that situation and realized, well, there's no way that I would be as good an agent as Scott McClellan, who was open because Joe Talamo was left Southern California. So I thought, I really, in all honesty, couldn't go to Mr. Rispoli and say, hey, I should be your agent, when Scott McClellan, one of the top agents of all time, is sitting there open, and look what happened. Indeed, Scott McClellan and Rispoli have hooked up, and I think they're going to have a great partnership.
Yeah, he definitely the Rispoli a guy to watch, and he had the backstory, as you say, with Anderson going over to Velasquez and holding on to Rosario as well over here on the East Coast. Going to be fun to watch as he continues out there on the West Coast with Rispoli. For folks who aren't familiar with him, get familiar, I would say. Just before we move on to your Belmont thoughts, because I want to do that before we wrap up too, do want to mention two grade ones on Monday. The Gamely, again, for Memorial Day, the Gamely and the Shoemaker is the race that is very intriguing, however, because the Shoemaker, certainly a horse that's near and dear to our hearts up here at Saratoga, Voodoo Song, who a couple of years ago won four races at the meet at Saratoga. Going to go off, I think, at a price on Monday, but March to the Arch from Mark Cassie, a little bit interesting, but more interesting from Cassie, War of Will, pops over to the turf. They scratched out of a race a couple of weeks ago when Santa Anita said they were going to reopen in the Shoemaker Mile. So War of Will on Monday to me with Flavian Pratt on board looks really intriguing to see what he can do. Getting back to the turf, actually, earlier in the career, he had some turf races. But I think War of Will, just going to be fun to see what he can do on the turf in a really competitive edition of the Shoemaker Mile.
The Shoemaker Mile just an absolute fabulous race. There's just no getting around it. And the game is pretty darn good in its own right. So those are two really fun grade one races that we have on Memorial Day.
Yeah, looking forward to the action on the holiday weekend. As I noted, I wanted to get some thoughts on the Belmont because your online column this weekend, you had a Belmont top 10. Usually those top 10s lead into the first Saturday in May, but with the Belmont now being the first leg of the Triple Crown, I think there'll be a lot of those Belmont top 10s or Belmont dozens over the next couple of weeks leading into the June 20th Belmont. Wanted to get your thoughts. Before we talk about the Belmont top 10 specifically, though, give me your thoughts on the revamped Triple Crown. I know there was some consternation, I think, over the Belmont going as early as they did and the mile and a half. But I talked to Pat McKenna earlier in the show, and I think given the situation this year, the Belmont had to shorten up just because of that. There really has been no prep races over the past couple of months to get horses ready for the mile and a half. But I think if they put up a million at a mile and an eighth June 20th, I think they're going to get a big competitive field. It's going to be different. It's not going to be the traditional Triple Crown, but I think it's going to work out well given the situation that we have to live with this year. But what are your thoughts about the revamped Triple Crown?
Well, I know a lot of people feel that this is going to need an asterisk, and my feeling is I don't really think so because, look, yes, we became very accustomed to the Triple Crown format during the time of the Triple Crown winners, Secretary of Seattle Slew, Affirmed, American Feral, and Justified. During that period, we did have a Kentucky Derby on the first Saturday in May, a two-week gap to the Preakness, and a three-week gap to the Belmont. And we had a mile and a quarter, a mile and 3/16, and a mile and a half. But it isn't as if the entire Triple Crown history has had that. In fact, the four Secretariats, every one of the Triple Crown winners went through a different Triple Crown than the Triple Crown winners from Secretariat to this day. So are we going to put an asterisk for the eight Triple Crown winners, the four Secretariats, the citations, the count fleets? Kurt Barton won the Kentucky Derby, and 4 days later won the Preakness. I mean, his was different. In fact, the Preakness, when Sir Barton won the Triple Crown, was a mile and an eighth, so a different distance. The Belmont has had various distances through its career. In fact, it was run a couple of times at a mile and an eighth way back when. So when people want to say, just because it's different than we've become accustomed to, it deserves an asterisk, okay, that's fine. You're going to go to that extent. Then you better put an asterisk for all of the Triple Crown winners, all eight of them, prior to Secretariat. And so I don't think an asterisk is needed. And look, people have said it's so difficult to win the Triple Crown because it's been in a five-week span, and that's true. There's no question about it. This is going to be difficult, too, to hold your form from June to September. And actually, it could even be tougher because the Preakness in recent years, with horses not running back out of the Kentucky Derby into the Preakness, has made the Preakness a race that often is won by the Kentucky Derby winner. And you talk about, we throw out the new shooters typically in the Preakness because they just don't seem to win. Well, there's going to be lots of new shooters when we have a gap from the Belmont Stakes in June to the Kentucky Derby in September. And so you're going to have fresh horses. You're going to have late-developing horses. I mean, for instance, an Arrogate was hardly on the radar at this time of the year when he was a three-year-old. I guarantee you he would have won the Kentucky Derby. Just remember his tremendous Travers performance. So, I mean, yes, it's different. It has changed. And I would say you would want to put an asterisk if it had always been the same. But it's been far from the same. Prior to Secretariat, the Triple Crown was different than it has become. So I don't think that this deserves an asterisk.
Yeah, I'm going to be really interested to see how it plays out this year because, circumstances have dictated the change, and I'll just be interested to see how the change plays into the whole scenario. But getting back to the Belmont coming up on June 20th, your online column, you had a top 10. I'll go over your top five: Nadal, Charlatan, Tis the Law, Maxfield, and Sol Volante. We're going to take a look at one of the divisions of the Arkansas Derby, won by Nadal. He'll be the number five horse here over King Guillermo. Charlatan, of course, won the other division. So Bob Baffert loaded. You've got him in the top two in your Belmont Stakes top 10 right now, with Tis the Law sitting at number three. Give us your thoughts as we head into the Belmont Stakes on your top horses.
Well, and by the way, you did talk about the distance of the Belmont being short to a mile and an eighth. Was an outcry for that, but as you pointed out, really, Naira's hands were pretty well tied from that. Once the Kentucky Derby went to September and the Preakness went into October, what was the Belmont going to do? And really, the choice was either a mile and an eighth or a mile and a quarter. And at a mile and a quarter, you got to start on a turn at Belmont. And if you draw an outside post, you're in tough shape there. I mean, it just made sense under the circumstances. But as I say, there's actually been a couple of Belmont fell in the name. But Seth, another thing that a lot of people have said is this is probably all going to be due, and it probably will. But this is going to be very difficult for a horse to win the Belmont Stakes in June, come back when the Kentucky Derby in September, and the Preakness in October. But I'm going to tell you a horse right now that I think could possibly do it. That is
this is a special, special horse that what he did in that Rebel Six was mind-boggling. To be on that hot pace like he did and still win that race. The two horses that he was involved with in the pace that day, they were way up there. And in that race, Vidal had every right to lose, and he didn't. He came back and verified that form by waiting slightly off the pace of the Arkansas Derby. Only manufacturer Arkansas Derby is in Charlotte. He was a supremely talented undefeated individual in his own right. So this Nadal just seems to never get tired. He's built like a tank, but he's built like a tank set, and he's got speed. I mean, he can rock and roll early in a race. He's got very fast tractors to keep on going. And it takes horses like a spectacular bib type horse to be able to do that. And this Nadal, another sign of what we're dealing with here, he came back a couple of weeks ago here in Santa Anita and went and zipped 4 furlongs in a bullet workout. Charleston hasn't even hit the work pad yet. In other words, it's taking Charleston more to recover from his trip to Arkansas and his race in the Arkansas Derby, which he won by 6 lengths. But it shows you this constitution that Nadal has. So he's got all the tools. He's got speed, he's got stamina, he's got the look, he's got the trainer. And this, now in this Triple Crown, he won't even have to go a mile and a half, which I think he would have been just fine at a mile and a half. But we don't even have to cross that bridge and deal with that issue of that distance. So I'm going on the record right now with you, Seth, and saying there's a chance, and I'm not saying it's a great chance, but I'm saying there's a chance that we could play to the Preakness Stakes in October. And then this controversy of whether this is a real Triple Crown or a Triple Crown that needs an asterisk is really going to be, you know, hot. Because I think the Dolphins could possibly be going for a 2020 Triple Crown.
Yeah, if Bob Baffert can come off already his Triple Crown resume and get a Triple Crown in a year like this, he is, because it you know, we all know now he's got it down prepping into that 5-week Triple Crown. But if he can do June, September, and October, he's really going to cement his place in horse racing history. But he's coming in loaded. There's no question about it. John, go ahead.
The way he said, watch out for a horse that's got in the barn that hasn't even run yet. This is a $3.8 million public auction purchase by the name of Zazan. And this horse absolutely was, I don't know, it's like just jaw-dropped his recent gate workout at Santa Anita. I mean, he has all the tools to be a horse that could be, for the second half of this year, like an Arrogator, like a West Coast. So watch out for Zazan from the Bob Baffert barn. He hasn't even raced yet, and believe me, he could be as much of a threat for the Kentucky Derby as anybody we have right now. So, and don't forget, Baffert's got a sense that he will be the favorite in the Santa Anita Derby. And he's undefeated. So you talk about a trainer who's loaded right now. That would be Mr. Bob Baffert.
Yeah, Webster's Dictionary, under embarrassment of riches, they show Bob Baffert's picture now.
Exactly.
John, we appreciate the visit. Again, happy to have Santa Anita back running, bringing, again, some sense of normalcy, a great holiday weekend card. We appreciate the visit, and we will talk again.
Great, Seth. Take care.
John White from Santa Anita. Again, a nice couple of stakes this afternoon and a couple of great ones coming up on Monday. I had a couple other pieces of news that I wanted to hit on before we wrapped up. And a couple that are Saratoga related. Just, you know, we talked to Pat McKenna earlier. You know, hopefully the Saratoga meet that gets more definitive with stakes dates and whatnot over the next few weeks. But 3 weeks ago or so, it was announced no Facic Tipton sales. That's one of my highlights of the meet. I always enjoy that sales week and going over at night to the sales, not just the select sale, but then on the weekend, the New York bred sale. Both of those sales now have been moved to Kentucky in September. They'll be folded into the Facic Tipton Kentucky sale. The big sale has become very popular. It's wall to wall in the backyard now. But the New York bred sale on the weekend has become popular too, not just with people who want to go over and watch, and it's still a little wall to wall, but it's popular as far as horses coming out of it because the two 2018 Saratoga, New York bred sale. 'Tis the law. Purchased by Sakatoga for $110,000. But no Saratoga sales this year. And it was just announced within the past couple of days. Racing Hall of Fame has canceled their ceremony for this year. Not a surprise. I mean, things are shaping up for big gatherings that it's probably going to be a while before that happens. And so to give the proper ceremony to this year's inductees, which include Mark Cassie, Daryl McCarg, Wise Dan, and some others, to give them their due, they will be folded into next year's Hall of Fame ceremony. So no Hall of Fame induction ceremony up at Saratoga this year. Keeneland has applied for a short summer meet. Their spring meet obviously canceled, but they would move some of those spring stakes to a short July 8th through July 12th meet potentially. Again, they've applied for this. That would include a July 11th Bluegrass Stakes. The Grade 1 Madison would be on July 11th as well. The Ashland, July 11th would be a big stakes day, obviously. The Bluegrass is a grade two, but would be kind of a highlight on that card. July 10th would be the Maker's Mark Mile. So again, potentially a powerhouse, but short meet, kind of leading into Saratoga. It would be fun. Jockey Luis Saez has dropped his Kentucky Derby appeal. He will serve 15 days. Starting May 20th, so that is already underway. If you don't see Luis Saez in the entries, that is why. Hats off to Edgar Prado. Edgar Prado passed Angel Cordero on the all-time list down at Gulfstream with a winner on Thursday. Edgar Prado now with 7,058 career wins. One more than Angel Cordero, and he is, what, eight away from the... Currently, he's number eight on the top 10 list, on the top all-time list for jockeys. Again, moving Cordero down to number nine. But Perry Outs is at number seven, just eight wins ahead of Prado. So it seems like Prado on the verge of moving up the list, top of the list. Again, this is incredible. Edgar Prado at number eight, now with 7,058. Number one on the all-time win list for jockeys in the United States. Russell Bays with 12,842, more than 3,000 ahead of Lafitte Pincai, who's number two on the list. But congratulations to Edgar Prado for moving up to number seven on the all-time list. All right, I got right back in the saddle this week because, as usual, I'm overtime. So I'm going to wrap things up. But, again, we're back on our usual schedule, which means OTB Live with 1 o'clock post times, I think, pretty much around the horn a little bit. I'll probably be back in an hour and a half or so to kind of kick things off. We'll look at a little Churchill, a little Gulfstream, some Tampa, and try to toss out some ideas for racing this afternoon. Looking forward to that. And because this is a holiday weekend, I'll also be in on Monday afternoon. Usually we're kind of going back to the regular schedule, OTB Live Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. But this coming week, I'll jump in this coming Monday with the holiday Memorial Day card and then take Wednesday off. But otherwise, we'll go back to kind of the normal schedule. No morning programming tomorrow, though. We're just kind of getting our feet wet again here. But we'll be back on kind of regular schedule for morning programming as well, too, as we go ahead. But, as I say, be back in about an hour and a half with OTB Live. Again, happy to be back in the studio. If you're still hunkered down at home, again, hopefully we can bring you a little distraction and entertainment, maybe give you an opportunity to cash a bet or two. I do want to also remind you, speaking of that, you can sign up for a Capital OTB bet account, and a sign-up bonus is available. Deposit either $50 or $100. When you wager double your initial deposit, you get that initial deposit back. So there is a free money sign-up bonus that continues throughout this month. There's also 3% on Churchill Down wagers. There are some restrictions there, but check out the website for more info on your Churchill Downs wagers. Again, you can sign up for a new account by going to CapitalOTBBet.com or CapitalOTB, and you'll find a sign-up link, and it takes you right through the process. Very easy. Don't forget, obviously, We are still under the situation where branches are closed, but there is phone wagering, and there is obviously online wagering with your tablet, your phone, your computer. Touchtone wagering is available if you'd like to use the phone. You know, you call up, and they give you options. Press number one for this, number two for that. Very easy to follow. So you can make touchtone wagering, or again, your tablet or your phone, computer. There are some easy bet locations that are available. You can't hang out throughout the day, but you can go. You can deposit money, withdraw money. You can make some bets at the start of the day at these locations. And, you know, they are all restaurants/pubs, so you can go in and maybe get some food as well and help them out during this period. Loopy's up in Fonda, Partners Pub in Johnstown. O'Toole's right down the street in Central Avenue here in Albany. Lakeview in Avil Park, Sampson's in Castleton, and Mijos in Marathon. That's in Cortland County. They're Thursday, Friday, Saturday. O'Toole's also is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday situation. But again, we'd love to have you participate and have some fun with us. That's the game plan. Again, if you're hunkered down, again, with some nice weather, pull the TV next to the window. Put the chair out in the backyard so you can watch the TV, or fire it up on your tablet or your phone as well. Or just kind of keep it in your mind. Go sit outside or mow the lawn a little bit and keep in your mind, post time 10 minutes away, get back in so you can get the bet down and watch the race and join us this afternoon. Again, back in about an hour and a half, Seth Merrow with Racing Across America. We're back, baby, and happy to be here. Hopefully, as I say, everyone out there has stayed safe so far. Continue to do so. Follow the rules. I've said right along, I'm all for reopening, but I'm also for kind of stay safe and wear the mask, no handshakes for a while, limit crowds, and I think we'll be okay. Particularly, I mean, it just seems like if you look at the numbers, New York City area was hard hit, and there's some other hard hit areas, but you look other sections of the country, including here, the numbers are reasonable. And again, I think if everybody just kind of stay smart, keep safe, we'll be okay for the foreseeable future and as things start to open up more and more. So we're looking forward to that. And again, with a reawakening of racing in the country, let's make it things a little bit more fun for us on the racing side of things. So I'm going to wrap things up for this Sunday morning edition, Saturday morning edition of I'm zipping through the holiday weekend. Let's have it go last as long as possible, because it does look like it's going to be some great weather. And on Monday when we're in here, we'll take a second to remember the whole point of Memorial Day weekend, which, of course, is people who gave the ultimate sacrifice in the military. And keep that in mind as the weekend goes along. But again, we'll talk a little bit more about that and remember those folks more on Monday when we're in here for Memorial Day proper. But in the meantime, I'm going to wrap it up. Be back in about, as I say, an hour and a half or so with OTB Live. Seth Merrow, Racing Across America, thanks for joining us. We'll see you in a little while.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off Track Betting.
Behind 48-3 for the opening half mile. They go to the first finish line. Great coach.